As we jump into the text, we are continuing to look at the life of Abram. And don't forget that this is within a bigger context. So the bigger context is that God is initiating a rescue plan. You see that he brought chaos out of order in the beginning of Genesis, and he entrusted it to humanity, and it fell apart. So he did a rescue plan through Noah, and soon after it fell apart. This is God again initiating a rescue plan through the person of Abram, and he invites Abram into this special covenant, this promise that he gives to Abram. He calls him into a special relationship and gives him these challenges and promises. He says, I want you to go to a land that I have prepared for you. He invites him onto a journey. He says, I'm going to give you, make your inheritance, make your family a great nation. I'm going to give you this clan, this nation, this people that's going to come from you. I'm going to bless you, and through you and your nation that comes from you, I'm going to be a blessing. You are going to be a blessing to the world. So he gives them a mission. And he invites them into a relationship. All of that is found at the beginning of Genesis chapter 12. This call, this invitation, this filled with challenges and promises that God gives to Abram. And what's amazing is that Abram hears this from God, and he's got these other gods that he has worshipped all around him. He decides he's going to follow Yahweh. And so he responds, and God leads him into a new land. And when we get to the end of verse 9 that we got to last week, he is traveling and he is worshiping God. He has set up altars, he's dedicated it to the Lord, and he's trusting in God for the things that God said he is going to give him. Things are good. Not unlike many conversion experiences I've heard where people, you know, they have this encounter with God and they enter this relationship with God and they are, you often use the word, on fire. They're excited to learn and grow. They're worshiping, like everything is right. And then what comes next? Let's pick up in Genesis chapter 12 and we're going to start reading at verse 10. At that time, a severe famine struck the land of Canaan, forcing Abram to go down to Egypt, where he lived as a foreigner. As he was approaching the border of Egypt, Abram said to his wife Sarai, "Look, you are a very beautiful woman. When the Egyptians see you, they will say, 'That's his wife. Let's kill him, then we can have her.' So please tell them you are my sister. Then they will spare my life and treat me well because of their interest in you." And sure enough, when Abram arrived in Egypt, everyone noticed Sarai's beauty. When the palace officials saw her, they sang her praises to Pharaoh, their king, and Sarai was taken into his palace. Then Pharaoh gave Abram many gifts because of her: sheep, goats, cattle, male and female donkeys, male and female servants, and camels. But the Lord sent terrible plagues upon Pharaoh and his household because of Sarai, Abram's wife. So Pharaoh summoned Abram and accused him sharply. "What have you done to me?" he demanded. "Why didn't you tell me she was your wife? Why did you say, 'She's my sister,' and allow me to take her as my wife? Now then, here is your wife. Take her and get out of here." Pharaoh ordered some of his men to escort them, and he sent Abram out of the country, along with his wife and all his possessions. Things don't always go the way we want them to. Mistakes happen. Issues outside of our control happen. In this story, crisis hits for Abram. The first thing that we would point out, that's a big crisis, is that famine strikes the land. There isn't food for him, for his family, for all of his livestock and his crops. Famine struck the land, and it says it forced Abram to go down to Egypt. In regards to God's promise and his covenant, that's a pretty significant thing because God had sent him to this land on purpose. And now Abram is leaving it. He's leaving behind the land that God said he was going to give to him. So we have this crisis, not only the famine, but a crisis in this covenant promise that the land that God took him to is now left behind. And the crisis continues because Abram acts out of fear. He looks at his wife and He sees that she's beautiful. Now, in this day and age, they did see beauty the way we do. They also saw it much deeper and more profound. And Abram knew that Sarai was a strong and a woman of dignity, which was well sought after. And so he is worried about what's going to happen when he gets there. And so he comes up with this plan. And I don't know exactly what he was thinking, but in his mind, initially, it's a win-win. He'll keep his life, and he's going to get some positive benefit from it. And so she's going to say that, or they are both going to say, that Sarai is his sister. That was a half-truth, but it was ultimately a half-truth is a complete lie. It was that she was his sister, and so they go down and they give this message, and Abram says, well, if we say this, then they'll actually look on me with favor and it'll be good for me. And so he goes down and gives that message, and sure enough, she's taken into Pharaoh's court, not just somebody important, but Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. And Abram is gifted all kinds of wonderful things. But in the meantime, now his wife is gone. The one through whom the promise of a nation is supposed to come. And so Abram has responded to the crisis that was outside of him in the famine, and then the crisis of fear within him, and now he has no land and he has no hope of an inheritance. The covenant is in complete crisis. God's rescue plan seems nearly lost without any hope for either the land or an inheritance. So I was thinking about this and reading about this week, this passage this week, these words from John Walton in his commentary struck me. He said this, as Abram sits alone and vulnerable in his tent in Egypt, the promises are in shambles. The covenant dangles from a frayed thread. No land, no family, nothing that looks even remotely like blessing. Everything is falling apart. And I wonder if Abram, as he sits there in his tent in Egypt, if he thought back to God's promise and questioned, oh, God, what have you done? Everything's falling apart. You made this promise, and now nothing is the way it was supposed to be. I'm sitting here in a foreign land. I'm sitting here without my wife. Everything is falling apart. I wonder if what he gained in the wealth and the riches started to lose their favor as he sat there alone in his tent. But God didn't leave him there. As the story continued, God moves and acts to bring Abram back to himself. This plague or something strikes Pharaoh's household, and they would have been able to go back and look at, when did this initiate? When did this happen? When did the bad things start happening in our household? And so the wise people in Pharaoh's household would have figured out, hey, it started when that woman came in. And so they do their investigation. They find out that she's actually married to Abram. So Pharaoh brings Abram and accuses him and then sends him on his way. Get out of our land. And Abram is actually brought back into relationship with his wife and brought back to the land, not through his own doing, but through the actions of someone completely outside of himself. God moves and acts to bring Abram back to the place of covenant and turn the crisis around. Land and family restored, brought back into relationship. And then ultimately, the passage ends by Abram being brought back into worship. John Walton continues in his commentary. He says that God will demonstrate again and again his ability to overcome obstacles and resolve jeopardy as he fulfills promises and provides what is necessary for the covenant to move forward. I am pretty sure that Abraham's ideal was not to get reprimanded by the king of Egypt and thrown out of the country on his ear, but God used that to bring back the covenant, bring things back to what the covenant needed. as we read this, again, going back to what we talked about last week, our question is, how do we see ourselves in this story? How do we think about this, not as like not because God acts always in this exact same way, but where do we see ourselves in this story? And I think the first thing, we can resonate with Abram's situation. Things don't always go the way we planned. Sometimes the things falling apart are things outside of us. Man, we lived in a messed up, broken world. COVID is something that it initiated outside of ourselves. We, in a very real way, face a famine in our world. A famine not of our own making. And then there are also things that we face that we mess up. And sometimes that famine gets compounded by our choices and our actions, our fears over what could be. It's so tempting when things are falling apart to think we can control what's going to happen here, and all too often our attempts to control actually lead things down a messier road. I'm not saying we should be called to inaction, but there's a difference between inaction and needing to control everything ourselves. We can act without trying to be the one who controls everything and every situation. I'm particularly struck by Abram acting out of fear. You know, things aren't going the way he wanted, and so he kind of goes into panic mode. I can relate so much to how easy it is to act out of what we think is going to happen. You know, at that point, he's not acting out of what is happening. He's acting out of this fear about what might be. I'm worried that we're going to go down there, and they're going to see you, and they're going to think you're beautiful, and because I'm your husband, they're going to take my life, and they're going to take you, and everything's going to fall apart. He's got this fear over what could happen, and so he tells himself this story. And he stops acting out of what is, and that is, he is married. He's in this relationship. He's got to figure out food stuff, but he's also got this promise from God, and that God's going to take care of things, that God's going to give him this land, that God's going to give him an inheritance, that God's going to bless him and be a blessing to a nation through him, that he's got this relationship with God. It's like he forgets what is and starts acting out of what might be. So often we do this. We imagine the story that could play out if we're honest, if we're serious about things. And we forget that the stories we tell, they're imagined. They're not real. Now, we might, they often feel real, but until they're unfolded, they're not real. I remember having this fear with all kinds of things, with school stuff. You know, if I'm honest with my teacher about my struggles with this, then they aren't going to respond well to me, rather than going and saying, hey, this is what happened, how can you help me? I remember having, this is one that maybe some other guys couldn't relate to. When I was in high school, I'd never asked a girl out because I told myself a story about how they were going to respond to even just asking somebody out. We get these fears and we act out of fears rather than what is actually real. And often acting out of those fears can quickly and easily lead us into a deeper crisis. I remember one situation. I delivered newspapers, and the newspaper I delivered had a voluntary subscription thing. Actually, no, sorry. I got a new paper out, and they had to pay, but there was no way for online payment, so I had to go ask people for money. I hated asking people for money. So I was delivering papers. I wasn't asking people for money, and then since I wasn't asking people for money, it was easy to, well, I won't deliver everything. All the flyers don't need to go out, do they? So I started like hiding them somewhere and not delivering all of the flyers. And then people started calling the newspaper office saying, hey, we're not getting this stuff. And basically it had snowballed to such an extent that I had like stacks of papers that I'd hidden. And I didn't want to tell anybody. I'd gotten in a hole so deep that if I tell someone what happens, then I'm going to get in huge trouble. And that just snowballed the effects. I didn't want to tell anybody and I couldn't get out of it. And ultimately what happened when it got out, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. I mean, it was, well, you've got to pay us back for these things and you've got to start delivering stuff. Like it was just, I had to clean stuff up, but I didn't face the effects of what I had done weren't nearly as bad as the story I told myself they would be. We can get caught up in acting out of the fear and it actually leads us into a deeper crisis. In this story, that happened with Abram. You know, he was worried about what was going to take place. He acted out of that fear, and it got worse because of that. Ultimately, what was God's response to it all? This one that he'd chosen to be the rescue plan, to be the initiator of it, what was God's response? Ultimately, God's response was to bring Abram back. God remained faithful to his covenant promises, to his relationship with Abram. The reminder here that the stuff that we mess up on, the stuff that seems like it's falling apart all around us, those things aren't going to undo God's covenant purposes, what he's doing in the world. God invites us to keep a big picture perspective. That God is accomplishing his purposes and the stuff, the world falling apart around us, aren't going to mess up God's purposes. I get this sense right now. I've heard Christian leaders acting like the fact that churches can't meet in person are going to somehow undermine God's entire purposes in the world, and so we have to, you know, fight against the government, we got to disobey because it's like the sky is falling and all of God's purposes are going to fail because we can't do a certain thing. God's purposes aren't thwarted by the sky falling all around us. The flip side is we often mess up. In our attempt to try and control things, things can get worse and God's purposes aren't going to be thwarted by us messing things up. He invites us to keep that big picture perspective that he's accomplishing his thing. He is going to be faithful. And then to continue participating in his rescue plan with him. His rescue plan that we are now a part of as those who are in Christ. Ultimately, God is faithful to his covenant purposes and he's faithful to his relationship with us. He invites us to find freedom from the chaos around us, freedom from our failures, freedom from our fears. No matter how much it looks like the sky is falling, God will be faithful, and he wants to hold us in that relationship. No matter how far we wander, no matter how badly we stumble, he wants to hold us in that relationship and keep us with him as a part of what he is doing in the world. And he ultimately invites us back to worship. If you continue reading in Genesis 13, it talks about Abram leaving worship, traveling north into the Negev, along with his wife and Lot and all they owned. And then in verse 3, from Negev they continued traveling by stages towards Bethel, and they pitched their tent between Bethel and Ai, where they had camped before. This was the same place where Abram had built the altar, and there he worshipped the Lord again. These things don't thwart God's plan or God's purposes. He invites us to learn. He invites us back into relationship. He invites us to fall back on the grace that we were invited into in the first place, rooted in his promises, not in our great ability, rooted in his faithfulness, not in everything going perfect around us. I got a really great glimpse of this from someone who wasn't even a Jesus follower. I worked at a paint store when I was in college. Now, first of all, I should say, I was completely unqualified for this job. I had no experience, I had no background, I had nothing. And I got hired to work in this paint store. And fairly early on, I got a painter came in, asked for an order. I grabbed 5 pails of paint, so like 20 gallons of paint. And I tinted them up, and only after I tinted them did I look and realize I tinted them wrong. I used the wrong formula. I messed up 20 gallons of paint, and I panicked. I was fairly new. I had no idea what I was doing, and it showed. And I didn't know how I was going to tell the boss, but I've got 20 gallons of paint there. I had to go tell somebody. So I went to my boss, and I said, look, like, I just totally messed this up. This is going to cost us a ton. I don't know how I'm going to fix this. They can't be reconciled because of how I messed them up. And my boss just looked at me and said, so do you know what you did wrong? Yeah, I know what I did wrong. I did that instead of that. Do we have more of that, you know, base here? I was like, yeah, we've got enough. I said, okay, put those in the mistint pile, fix it, and we're good. Show me grace. Show me that there's possibility to move things forward even after we mess up. I so appreciated that example of what grace looks like. God's is infinitely more true. I don't know what picture of God you've been raised with. If it's a God that's angry, just waiting to push you down when you get judged. If it's a God who doesn't trust you because, you know, you don't have what it takes. From the picture we have of God is a God who says, I'm going to do whatever I can, whatever it takes. My covenant is going to remain true. My promises are faithful, and I want you to be a part of it. No matter what you've done, no matter where things have gone, I want you to be in on this. He's going to bring you back to himself if you're willing to come. As I was preparing this, I couldn't help but think of a song by one of my favorite singer-songwriters, Rich Mullins. It's called If I Stand, and it's got this line in it. It says, if I stand, let me stand on the promise that you will pull me through. This picture of just being strong enough because it's God's promise. But then the following line blows me away. And when I can't, it's not if I can't, when I can't. When I mess up, when I stumble, when I fail, when I can't, let me fall on the grace that first brought me to you. That's what Abram was learning. Radically different picture of the gods that he had known before. Yahweh introducing himself in ways that you'll see over and over and over again through Abram's life, through the life of Israel, through the life of the disciples, through the process of the early church, and this invitation that we have through the God that we follow, that we worship, that loves us more than we can imagine. He's at work. He will be faithful to his covenant purposes and his relationship with us. I'm going to close by singing that song by Rich Mullins, and I hope it's an encouragement to you.
Sun, more that shines in the night than just the moon. There's more than just this fire here that keeps me warm in a shelter that is larger than this room. There's a loyalty that's deeper than mere sentiment, and music higher than the songs that I can sing. The stuff of earth competes for allegiance. I owe only to the giver of all good things. So if I stand, let me stand on the promise that you will pull me through. And if I can't, let me fall on this grace that first brought me to you. If I sing, let me sing for the joy that is born in me these songs. But if I weep, let it be as a man who is longing for his home. There's more that dances on the prairies than the wind, more that pulses in the ocean than the tide. There's a love that's fiercer than the love between friends, more gentle than a mother when her baby's at her side. There's a loyalty that's deeper than mere sentiment, a music higher than the songs that I can sing. The stuff of earth competes for the allegiance I owe only to the giver of all good things. So if I stand, let me stand on the promise that you will pull me through. And if I can't, let me fall on the grace that first brought me to you. And if I sing, let me sing for the joy that is born in me these songs. And if I weep, let it be as a man who is longing for his home. So if I stand, let me stand on the promise that you will pull me through. And if I can't, let me fall on the grace that first brought me to you.